pipes with nozzles. I think there's something like 16 nozzles coming out the wings and tail, and lay down a very wide swath of this chemical. It comes out as an aerosol. Next picture. And it falls on the roofs of houses if they're down below. And this is what's pertinent here. I took this on the border between Cambodia and Vietnam. This is a typical situation in a village. The people during the monsoons collect their drinking water off rooftops. This pipe runs into a great big earthen cistern. You see them, they sell them in the marketplace. These huge, they hold all 40, 50 gallons, I guess. And we have calculated that at the rate of application of a spray plane dumped this Agent Orange on the roof of that house during the rainy season, enough stuff could wash into the drinking water of a pregnant woman so that if she's as sensitive as rats, it would she'd get enough dose to make a malformed offspring. Now, keep in mind that with thalidomide, which also does this, what I'm saying is this Agent Orange is a thalidomide-type agent. If it's like thalidomide, women are much more sensitive to, in terms of malformations, than the rats were. And we don't know, but what this isn't true with this Agent Orange. Next picture. That's why it's been banned, I might say. It's no longer been used. This is what it does to chicks. We'll just run through these in a hurry. I was given samples of all three agents, Agent Orange, White, and Blue, that we use over there, by the chemical operations at Tonsonat Air Base. I had them tested for toxicity by these malformed limbs on these chicks by a U.S. Food and Drug Administration doctor, Dr. Jacqueline Verrett. She found all of the agents that we use over there highly toxic to chick embryos in her preparations. And keep in mind that we're dumping tons and tons of this on these people. Next picture. And we now know that all of them are toxic to... Now, here's the way it looks when you fly over a sprayed area in the Saigon River Delta. This is down near Vung Tau. And you can see a swath of gray. Next picture. Get down a little closer. this is a healthy mangrove swamp. The reason that we sprayed in here was that the freighters coming up from the South China Sea to supply Saigon have to go through these narrow channels, and the military felt that it was prevent ambush if we defoliated the area. So just hundreds of square miles have been killed. Next picture shows you what it looks like. We went 65 miles on PBRs down through there, and that's all. That'll focus a little better, I guess, Sarge. And these mangroves are killed. They're not... And whether they'll ever come back, Westing, who was a forester, the second time he was in there, he couldn't see any sign of regeneration. These things were sprayed maybe 8 years ago. They're nothing green at all. No birds, no nothing. Now, I want to say a word or two about this, because the same PBR that took the AAAS scientists down went down a week later, and at the precise point where this picture was taken, where the Americans had made a landing, the NLF had brought in a 40-millimeter rocket and wiped out that PBR 1 week after my friends got off it. Now, there's a lesson here, because it proves that this defoliation did not prevent the ambush. The other side got in there, even though it was defoliated, and did the damage that that the Army said it was preventing. Next picture. there's a very serious erosion problems. You know, I think those of you who... That's mycology. Know what happens when you remove the top cover of a forest. Now, here's a hardwood forest. These are dead trees. These trees are probably 150 feet high. They're Lagostromia. We saw a lot of them in Cambodia. They're a very, very valuable source of timber. This is the sort of tree that I said 6.2 billion board feet have been killed, particularly up and around in war zone C and D, Tainan and Northwest. Next picture. Now, this is the valley in Quang Nai that was sprayed. You see the brown swath right down that valley? The ranch hand boys, the ones that defoliate, the 12th Air Commando Squadron, I think it was, that did this, got almost all that rice. Now, the colonel told the AAAS team that was all destined for NLF soldiers. In fact, they found out from USAID people that it was all Mount of Montagnards living there. Next picture. That's west of in Quang Nai province. Now, we're on the Cambodian border now. I just want to show you what's really there. This is in My Mat. this is the place, if I can diverge a little bit into a, get a little political, that President Nixon pointed his finger to this town and said it'd been the headquarters of the NVA in Cambodia for the last 5 years. He said this place was completely controlled by the NVA. Well, there they are. But if you know Indochina, they're all Cambodians. As you know, the Vietnamese look very different from Cambodians. Cambodians are larger, they're much darker, they wear a totally different dress, the women do. I should also point out that in this so-called communist sanctuary in Cambodia, the Sihanouk government had invited and actually took through this area, this commie sanctuary, four American experts in July of 1969. They were taken all through. They flew over the commie sanctuaries in helicopters. One of them is Charles Minerick from Fort Detrick. And it doesn't seem logical to me that if it was what Nixon characterized it to be, that they would have allowed officers from Fort Detrick and Washington, D.C. to wander all through those sanctuaries. So I think he was misinformed on that. I'm going to take you all through these communist sanctuaries in Cambodia. Here we are flying over them now. This is in a Royal Cambodian airplane. Put that right back for maybe some. It'll make some of the, my colleagues homesick. Do you see over the right wing is Black Virgin Mountain in Tainan? I don't know if anybody's been up on there. A lot of people died on that mountain. Now belongs, I think, to the NLF. Next picture. Now, here we are flying over a defoliated Cambodian rubber plantation. This, as I say, Nixon said, was completely under NVA control. The facts are, these were very lucrative French-owned rubber plantations. And there were many, many French people living there, and Belgian, the plant pathologists, with their wives and children. We asked them, have you seen any military activity, any soldiers? None at all, just a few of the Royal Cambodian Army troops. it's interesting that the rubber plantations of Cambodia were the world's second largest source of natural rubber. I dare you to think what the first source is. It's U.S. Firestone in Liberia. I don't know if there's any connection between the destruction of the second French-owned ones and the first. Next picture. Cambodian rubber production is now completely destroyed. Here's the way it looked on the ground. We are now in the heart of the sanctuaries. The Vietnam border is just across the, it's just down that road. And it was through this road that many of the American troops came across into Cambodia. I saw on TV shooting it right into this very plantation. Next picture. Now, I want to show you some of the other, you saw what happened to the rubber trees. Now, this is a jackfruit tree. There's a little Cambodian boy. You see a perfectly obvious the difference. See, they look very different from Vietnamese. These jackfruit were killed with a single application. They're like the mangroves. They don't just defoliate, they die. And a jackfruit, see, there's a big, one of the earlier fruits remaining. It's a very good source of food for these people. Next picture. As I say, 30,000 people were in the area. Now, this is interesting from the standpoint of a biologist because we're taking these pictures 8 months after the attack, and this is what is known as a custard apple. It should be about the size of a grapefruit and a nice big green juicy thing, but due to this chemical, we don't yet know exactly what it was because Uncle Sammy is pretty ashamed. It's hard to get anything out of him about this test, about this attack. But whatever it was, it caused these fruits to dry up and go black, you see. And this was very rough.
You're listening to the Winter Soldier investigation over WBAI in New York City.
For them to get out and buy food. They grow most of their own food. Next picture. Now, this is what it did to papaya. These are leaves that have 8 months later, the tree is still sick as a dog. It's the leaves are refoliated, but now they're dying, and the fruit is very, very deformed. And keep in mind, go ahead, the next picture. These herbicidal weapons are very, very effective against subsistence farmer populations of the sort that we have in Indochina, Africa, and South America. And if we don't put a stop to their use now, I think we're going to see them employed against third world peoples on a tremendous scale. We were told when we were in Vietnam, the only limits to the operation at that time was the fact they didn't have enough C-123s and crews to do it. Now, I want to conclude by showing you, I just can't resist showing you what happened to the Cambodians at Dak Dam. This is a Soviet 37-millimeter anti-aircraft gun, which they had every right to have, and it had fired at an American plane. While we were there, we saw at least three aircraft openly violate, fly right across Cambodia, American aircraft. The whole gun crew here was killed, of course. Next picture. As I say, here's a trench. There's still one of the helmets that died down from after they dug the boys out. About 15 of them were dug out of this trench here. They were taking cover. Now, on the skyline there is Vietnam, and the Special Forces camp at Bu Prang. We could see it, look over there. And what made the Americans mad was that they wanted to be able to fly over Cambodia to maintain good aerial reconnaissance, and because the Cambodians had the gall to defend their airspace, they decided to take out this post. Okay, next picture. There is the smashed hospital. And it was well marked. There were bomb craters about 100 feet away from this, and the beds, we picked up medicine, etc. It was, and the point about this hospital was, it was at least a quarter of a mile from the gun positions. It was deliberately attacked. I'm ashamed to have to, it breaks my heart to have to say this about what our government has done. Next picture. But whether this is an aberrant phenomenon, I don't know. I won't, but I saw this with my own. Here are the broken bottles. And I say, on the road, next, is that the last one? Right, this is Art Westing down in one of these craters. This is a 500-pound bomb crater. This was the one that knocked over the hospital. It was not aimed at the military installation at all. Okay. Well, I think I've taken up too much time, so...
Thank you very much, Dr. Pfeiffer. In order to facilitate considerable amount of questioning later, rather than allowing questions now, we have fewer panelists here than you had with the other group, so we'll go on with their testimony, and then we'll all tie it together for you at the end, all right? The next person to speak with you will be Mr. Doug Hostetter, who will discuss the actual effects of chemical biological warfare programs on people, animals, and crops in the Southeast Asian area.
Is there any? Yeah, is it live?
Yeah.
My name's Doug Hostetter. I'm a resident of Harrisonburg, Virginia, currently in school in New York City in the New School for Social Research in graduate study in sociology. I worked for 3 years for Vietnam Christian Service from July 1966 until June 1969 in community development in the village of Tam Kỳ, in the province of Quang Tien, South Vietnam. During that time, I learned to speak Vietnamese and lived in the area, learned to know the people quite well. I recently got back from a National Student Association trip, both to Saigon and Hanoi, during the month of December. I spent 10 days in Saigon at that time, and 8 days in Hanoi and surrounding areas. I'll speak a little bit first about the use of defoliation in the movement of personnel, specifically refugees. Quang Tien province has a population of about 300,000 people. According to government statistics in 1968, over 100,000 people in this area were refugees. The people from western Quang Tin, from about a kilometer west of Route 1 all the way to the Laotian border, were almost completely removed, with the exception of two special forces camps, one at Tien Phuc and one at Hau Duc. The movement of these refugees was done in a number of ways. Earlier, there had been attempts to move them by taking American troops in with helicopters and bringing them out by helicopters. They were unable to get all of the people in this method, and in some of the areas, it was too insecure to take in American choppers. So for these areas, they would go across the areas with heavily defoliating the areas. I speak Vietnamese, and I would go out to the Vietnamese in the reception center and in the refugee camps and ask them about the situation in the homes where they had come from. All of the areas west of Quang Tin have been heavily defoliated. The reason why most of the people came in was because there was no more food to eat or because they were forcibly brought in by American helicopters. The people said that usually right around the harvest time, the planes would come over and would defoliate the whole areas. It would destroy all of the rice crop and any other above the ground vegetation. Sweet potatoes and peanuts that were reasonably developed could be dug up and could be lived on for a short period of time. But if an area was repeatedly defoliated, they were not able to subsist from one planting to the next on sweet potatoes or peanuts, and so they would be forced to come in. During this time, I did have the chance at times to go into areas which were defoliated by American planes out of Da Nang. In March of 68, I went into the village of Ki Phu, Quang Tin province, and talked with farmers and villagers in these areas. They informed me that about 4 or 5 days before I had come there, the area had been defoliated. I checked back, and the attempt had been to defoliate the village of Ki An, which at that time was under the control of the National Liberation Front. But that morning, there had been heavy coastal winds, which had lifted the defoliants up over one village and landed them down in Ki Phu and Ki Trum villages. I spoke with farmers, and they informed me that they had lost cattle, pigs, water buffalo, ducks, and chickens. A number of the farmers showed me the dead animals. I talked to quite a number of the farmers. I made up a list of how many water buffalo, pigs, and cattle the farmers had lost, because this was in a Saigon government village. I took the list with the names of the villagers, the hamlets, and the village which they had come from, and took it into the MACV headquarters in Tam Kỳ. I spoke with the deputy province advisor for Quang Tin province, and also with a number of CORDS people, civilian organization, Revolutionary Development Support Command. I spoke with both of these, and I informed them of the village that had been defoliated, and according to CORDS regulations, they had to go back and pay these villagers for their losses in livestock and losses in rice, peanuts, and sweet potatoes. When I told the officers about the cattle, pigs, and water buffalo being lost, they referred me to the Army manual, which assured me that these defoliants do not in any way harm or injure any human beings or animals. So therefore, these animals did not die. I gave them the names of the farmers, the hamlets in which they came from, and the villages and districts, and asked them to go out and speak with the farmers and persuade them that their animals had not died.
They all declined at this point. There was no reparations paid for crops or animals which were killed during this time. You were informed by Dr. Pfeiffer that after much pressure from some American scientists, Agent Orange has been discontinued officially by the American forces in South Vietnam. What has happened is that these defoliants have been turned over to the Vietnamese government so that the Americans no longer have control of Agent Orange and its use, according to American officials. 2 weeks ago in Da Nang, Judy Collins of the Institute of Policy Studies was in the airport of Da Nang and saw Judy Coburn, and saw the barrels of Agent Orange standing in the airport. When asking about it, she was again informed that these are no longer under American control. You also noted from the photographs that the airplanes which are now flying the defoliation missions are marked with Vietnamese markings, so that it is an official Vietnamese operation now. However, due to the fact that they have no Vietnamese pilots that can fly C-123s, they have to be flown by American pilots. But it is a Vietnamese operation now, and the Americans officially are not using Agent Orange in Vietnam. You will be glad to hear that, I'm sure. While I was in Hanoi, I spoke with Dr. Nguyen Xuân Nguyen of the Binh Vien Hanoi Hospital. He works in the ward which is dedicated to Southerners, which is which treats Southerners that come up to the north. I will read just a few quotes from his report from our interview. In our hospital, we have 903 patients from the south. 179 of these show the effects of chemicals. Of these, 90 are men, 19 are women, and 70 are children. They have lived in the affected zones for periods from 2 months to 5 years. When speaking of the symptoms, the first symptoms, this is in people that have been exposed